yesterday, as Coach Taylor was saying, we were in Grand Rapids for a track meet, and while you were trying to keep your heads above water, we were trying to either not get toasted from sunburn or windburn, both of which were in the extreme yesterday. So in the course of the conversation of the day, I had a wonderful time, and God was really gracious in that, all sorts of surprises. However, toward the end of it, I got two questions that came in very close proximity. And the first question was, Coach, do you believe in aliens? Okay. The second question was, do you believe in spirits? Well, at that point, I had more of an opportunity and chose to do that. So I said to him, what do you mean, do I believe in spirits? What are you asking me? Well, do you believe in spirits? And I said, yeah, I heard that, but what do you mean by it? What are we talking about in terms of spirits? And I didn't, because I wasn't being my usual annoying self. I didn't say there's a semantic range to spirits that runs all the way from that which you imbibe to, I didn't go there. But I began to, ask the question, what are you asking me? Before I began the process of creating an answer, my purpose in doing that was to answer the question first, what information are you seeking? What is it that you are asking me with this question? Because it wasn't simply a generic, let's kill time and do this. There had been an ongoing discussion, and to actually answer what they wanted to know required me to explore more deeply into what is it that you want. Now, you know that I have become incredibly fond of Lewis Carroll's line from Alice in Wonderland, which road do I take? And the Cheshire Cat says, where do you want to go? And the answer is, I don't know. And the Cheshire Cat says, then it doesn't matter which road you take. So, where do you want to go? What is it that you're asking? Now let me put that into a biblical context for the text of the morning. Maybe. Mark 16:6 says, and he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. He has risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him. You seek Jesus of Nazareth. So, I want to look at three things about that text and about the whole pericope here in Mark 16. I want to look at the issue of bought. I want to look at the issue of seek. And I want to look at the issue of fleeing, fled in the past tense. 16:1. Through 4. When the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, for when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb, and they were saying to one another, who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb? Looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away. It was very large. They were seeking Jesus. They had been at the cross on Good Friday. They had been at the tomb at the end of Good Friday, and they were prevented by time from fulfilling all that they had wanted to do on Friday evening. And now they were coming back on Sunday after the Sabbath to take care of unfinished business. But notice the fact that before they came to the tomb, what did they do? They bought spices. They asked the question, how are we going to roll the stone away? Now, I want you to keep that in mind with regard to the big picture. I am coming to minister to my beloved friend Jesus. Number one, I'm not coming empty-handed. Number two, I'm not coming unprepared. And before they even begin the fulfillment of their purpose, they have done the essential preparation that is necessary for the accomplishment of their task. They did not stumble into the tomb area. They came prepared because they were seeking something and they wanted to find it, and they were prepared before they ever got to accomplish that. Okay. I'll get the technology eventually. Luke 14:28 says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sits not down first and counts the cost, whether they have sufficient to finish it?" You have a project. You have something that you're going to do. The natural and appropriate thing is for you to consider. How long is it going to take? What's it going to cost me? What's required? What do I have to bring? And that is a wise and prudent situation with regard to anything that you are going to do. And I confess that on a couple of occasions, I have been sent to the store to pick up a piece that was missing from the recipe that certain people didn't realize that the box had been raided and was empty. But it's counting the cost. It is being prepared in terms of what we're doing for the moment. "If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for the members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." 1 Timothy 5:8. How prepared are we in terms of the things that are around us, in terms of the options that we have? And see, the Marys and Salome, they took into account all of the needs. They took into account all of the responsibilities of the household. 2 Corinthians 8:12, "For if the readiness is there," see, "it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have." If the attention, if the readiness is there, see, it's going back to this issue of preparation. It's going at back to this issue of, I'm not accidentally following into something. 2 Corinthians, continuing in that pericope, I skipped a verse. "Your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness." And the point of it is that God brings to the family of faith all sorts and all manner of gifts. And those gifts are available to supply the needs across the whole family, so that there's fairness and that there is the accomplishment of God's purpose. And then John 1 John 3:17, "If anyone has the world's good and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him?" Take that and apply it to the situation of the morning, Mark 16. Mary and Salome decide, no, I'm not spending the money for spices. What happens to their project? They were prepared. They begin the journey by preparing what is necessary. So what does that look like? Well, first of all, preparation begins in active listening. You're not prepared if you don't actually hear what's being said. That's why when I was asked the question yesterday, I went back to say, what are you asking me? Because so often we answer questions that were never asked. And the answer that we give makes no sense because that wasn't what the person intended. And so I have to be intentional that I'm actually listening and exploring what the question is that I'm being asked. Second thing that has to happen is I have to be authentically present. If I'm going to be prepared, I actually have to be there, be in the game. And when I'm relating to people in particular, that means that I'm focused and I'm intentional about what is going on in this moment. I'm not just sitting next to, but I'm actually engaged in the conversation and in the process that is taking place. And the third thing with being prepared is that I'm quickly obedient. In other words, to be prepared is that I am prepared in the appropriate way to respond, whether it is with information, whether it is with insight, or whether it is with doing something that is helpful and necessary in that moment. I do not simply sit there, but in my preparation, I have something to give, and that giving results in action on my part. And all of these, the preparation, all of these are part of preparation. The active listening, the authentically present, and the quickly obedient mark me as one who is prepared for this moment to do what is necessary. The second issue I want to look at is the seeking, and that's in verses 5 and 6. Entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe, and they were alarmed. I bet. Think about it for a moment. They're going to the tomb. The tomb, the stone is rolled away, and there's a dude sitting there in white. And let me pick up that a little bit. Oh, okay. They don't, Mark doesn't record it, but it was white as lightning. And, I bet in a dark tomb, that stood out pretty well. No wonder they were afraid. And he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has risen, for he is not here. See the place where they laid him." The zetereo, the seeking, is to investigate, to desire, to ask for, or to seek, to try to get or reach something one desires. What do you notice? What do you take from that definition and that description? First of all, there's an intensity to it. Yeah. I'm not accidentally coming to this. I have an interest. I have a commitment that I'm fulfilling in doing this. And I have a desire that prompts me to seek. And so I'm motivated by simply a deeper or more powerful motivation to investigate, to discover, to look at, and to deal with it in it. Important because seeking in this context, and particularly in the text, is not accidental. It's purposeful, and it is driven by a desire on my part for an answer. Jeremiah 29:13 says, God says, "You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart." What's the point? God doesn't play games. And if you're not truly serious about seeking Him, then you're wasting His time. You know people who will argue with you simply for the sake of argument. You know people who will ask questions simply for the sake of holding your attention. They don't care about the answer. They don't care about the information. What they're trying to do is in some way, shape, or form provoke in that moment. And God says that if you're serious, I am going to unpack for you, I'm going to unfold for you the magnificence of all that I have, but I'm looking for your sincerity. I'm looking for the level of your interest that's there. Now, in Philippians chapter 3, verse chapter 2, verse 21, Paul says, and they all seek after their own interest, not those of Jesus, not those of Christ Jesus. See, what they're seeking is for themselves. They're not seeking Jesus. They're not seeking the truth of the matter. They're seeking to satisfy. And one of the big challenges in modern Christianity is we have painted God as the big Santa who gives us everything that we want or desire. And so if I have a need or a want or a desire or a whim, then I just ask God and God supplies. And that demeans the essence of the relationship. It's not that God isn't willing or desirous of providing for our needs. His word said specifically that His grace will supply what we need. The problem is it's our motivation and that we're using God instead of rejoicing in the relationship. What do you think she's doing? Luke 15:8. Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? Light a lamp, sweep the house, seek diligently until she finds it. But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be yours as well. Matthew 6:23. Man comes to Jesus. Jesus says to him, what do you want me to do for you? Lord, that I may receive my sight. So my question, what are you seeking? Now, remember about preparation, active listening, authentically present. Authentically present. What are you seeking? Welcome to social media. How many followers? How many people like your stuff? How many people ooh and ah over your photographs? That's a major source. The latest stuff that I'm reading is that the addiction to social media is a major challenge in the business world today. Because whatever your work hours are, so much of it is consumed not with work, but with fame, playing games. Well, then there's always the American dream, right? The almighty dollar. And so my life is all about making money, and I'll sacrifice anything to make money. One of Carl's students was asking a businessman about how much money he made. And he made a very significant amount of money. Very significant. But you know what it cost him? 80 hours a week. 80 hours a week. So, you do the math, right? How many hours in a week? How many? 120, 28. Subtract 80 leaves barely time to sleep, to eat. What about your life? Well, that's the 80 hours. So the question is all that money worth it? And the question, I mean, really goes to, what are you going to do with it? Because you can't spend it because you're working to earn it. And you can't take it with you as much as you want to. But see, that's our life. We are consumed with seeking fortune. And then the biggie. And I put fun, A, because it's an F and it fits my series. But what am I really talking about? Pleasure. Happiness. Sex. Drugs. Rock and roll. Right? I mean, and think of the number of people whose lives are truly ensnared, enmeshed, tied up in seeking happiness, seeking fun. And the number of the amount of industry that exists simply to provide that. So there's a question pending. What are you seeking? Those are the big three that I came up with. You have your own. You can come up with your own as to what you really want. Those are easy and big and popular and all that. But in this text, and what we're really looking at this morning, is the women had a specific purpose, and they were seeking Jesus. They were seeking Jesus. Because they expected, they knew that Jesus was the source of all good. And all of the fun and all of the fortune and all of the fame that they needed would be wrapped up in Jesus, and that he would supply it. And that was their heart's desire. Then have an interesting end to this. Matthew 16:7-8. The angel says to them, "Go tell his disciples and Peter that he's going before you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." That's a pretty good promise. Pretty exciting. I'm seeking Jesus. And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Now, put that all together. I am looking for Jesus, whom I saw crucified and died, who I helped lay in this tomb. I want to anoint, I want to take care of, I want to do my duty toward him. And I come early on Sunday morning, and he's not there, and an angel tells me he's risen. And then the angel says to me, "Go and tell." And I don't tell anyone because I'm afraid. Because I'm afraid. Sociologist by the name of Cannon created a theory. And the theory is very simply that, having studied stressors and how stressors affect the sympathetic nervous system, SNS, a fight or flight response, psychological response to the stress. A, the perception of stress leads to activation of the SNS, which results in a body prepared for intense motor activity, for attack, defense, or escape. intense-sensory perception. There's the angel. There's the place where Jesus lay. How do we respond? They fled. Now, it just is a moment because it works out in the whole thing. Mark 9 says, "For he did not know what to say, for they were terrified." Exodus 3:6 says, "And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Luke 12:4-5 says, "I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body, and after that have nothing more they can do. But I will warn you whom to fear. Fear him who after he has killed has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him." What's my point in those three texts, and what's my point in this whole issue of fear? Beloved, they were seeking Jesus, but at the deepest level of our understanding, we recognize that when I encounter Jesus, something is going to change. Something is going to be different, and my life is not going to be the same. Now, this is the fear that underlays this whole question of what am I seeking? Because I know at the depth of my being, without actually articulating it, that if I actually encounter God, if I actually come face to face authentically with God, that I'm going to change one way or another. And I'm scared to death of what that means. That's the flight or flight response. And so all of this points to the fact that if you're seeking Jesus, you better count the cost. You better be serious about what you're doing. Because while there is extraordinary great goodness, there's also the reality that at the very core, the fundamental foundation of my existence, he's going to ask me to change. I am not going to come face to face with the risen Christ and walk away as if nothing happened. The only way for that is for me not to be really present. And you know, because we do it all the time in all sorts of situations, that I can be face to face with you and not home. You can look and see nothing. And it's our defense mechanism. It's the fight or flight in that situation. And it's because I don't really want to come and confront Jesus. I don't really want to be before Jesus. Because if I am, I know he's going to change something. And I don't know what that may be, but I'm scared to death that the moment he changes me, I lose my illusion of control. A couple more, just to hammer home this point, because it's too important to let go. "And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had been had the legion sitting there, clothed in his right mind. They were afraid." Remember the guy, demon-possessed? Jesus sets him free. Now he's sitting, he's clothed, he's dressed. Wow, that's a new thing for him. And he's sitting there talking to them. And everybody goes, wait a minute. This is the guy who's been running around naked, scaring everybody for all these years. How about the one in the boat? Mark 4:41. Remember, they're crossing the sea. Wind and waves come up. They wake Jesus up and say, "Hey, Jesus, don't you care that we're dying here?" And Jesus says, "Peace, be still." And they were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." See, when you come to Jesus, when you start playing with Jesus, when you actually seek Jesus, you know at the very core of your being that something significant is going to happen. You are either going to begin a lifelong battle to fight Him. You will ultimately lose, but you will spend your life fighting Him. And there are millions upon millions of people who are in that position. The second option is you fly. You run away. You pretend you didn't see. You pretend you didn't hear. You pretend it didn't put a call on you. And you deal with it. The only answer to fear is 1 John 4:18. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment, and the one who fears is not made perfect in love. See, my antidote to my fear of Jesus is simply my love, allowing His love to overflow, allowing His love to leak into me and overwhelm me, and to my love to respond to Him and say, thank you, Lord. Psalm 40, blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust. Psalm 27, the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life, of whom shall I be afraid? See, when you really come to Jesus, when you really find the empty tomb, and when you see Him and understand the depth of His love and His provision for you, then all the things of the world grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight. That's the promise. That's what it's all about. So, they fled because of fear. Fear is rooted in the lack of trust, and trust is rooted in not believing God. Pretty simple. Pretty nasty. I'm afraid because I don't believe. I don't believe the one who stills the wind and the waves with a command. I'm afraid because I don't believe the one who sets the prisoner free from whatever demons hold them fast. I'm afraid because I don't believe the one who opens eyes and allows me to see the magnificence of His creation. So, here's the question of the day, the most important question that I can ask you, the most important answer that you can give on any day, and particularly on this day. Who or what are you really seeking? There's no trick in that, beloved. I'm not playing games with it. I'm just asking you to be honest and looking at the depth of your being. You know why you're here. You know what really motivates you. You know what propels it. John 14, Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's the path to ultimate satisfaction. There's the only path to real joy in this life. There's the means by which we become successful in the way we live our lives day by day. And it's incredibly simple. There's no trick to it. It's, I want Jesus. I want to know Him. I want to understand Him. I want to walk with Him. I want to talk with Him. I want to play with Him. And I want Him to lead me in that straight path. We were created for that in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. We abandoned it in Genesis chapter 3. God opened the door to restoration in Mark 15 and 16. But the invitation is to you today. What are you seeking? Because in seeking Jesus, in finding Jesus, you find life. Abundant in the present and eternal in glory.